Actually, it's Mace. Hour number two. The DDC, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. Let's head to Cincinnati. Dan Horde, play-by-play voice, Bearcats, Bengals. We remember him talking to him before the playoff matchup. We'll talk a little bit more in depth. We've brought up Desmond Ridder several times on the show. I believe John Robinson probably is going to be in the market to draft a quarterback. And because of the relationship with the head coach, Mike Vrabel, and the Bearcats head coach, let's find out a little bit more about Ridder. I asked Sean Salisbury about him in the first hour. He liked him. Let's find out if Dan likes him. Dan, how you doing?
I love him. I'm doing well. I saw okay. Desmond Ridder lead Cincinnati to 44 wins over the last 4 years, including the first appearance in the 14 playoff this last year. So I am definitely pro Desmond Ridder. The Titans would be very wise to try to get him into the pipeline.
So that was a quick answer. What do you love about Desmond Ridder?
Well, I saw his growth. So I've been broadcasting their games for more than 20 years. I saw Desmond Ridder for 5 years. He came in, redshirted his first year. And one of the things that I remember during his redshirt freshman season is that as the year went along, head coach Luke Fickell was very tempted to blow up the redshirt year back then and get him on the field. And ultimately they decided, you know what, it's not worth it. Let's wait and give him the opportunity to play the following year, and that turned out to be a great decision because then they got 4 seasons out of him, and they won at least 10 games in every year. But when he first started out as a redshirt freshman, he was a great runner and a so-so thrower, and his throwing ability got better and better every year. He's worked in the offseason with quarterback guru Jordan Palmer, improved his mechanics, became a much more accurate passer. He's always been good at recognizing defenses, I think. That's one of his strengths, and I think he's one of the more polished quarterbacks going into this draft. I know some of the draft gurus have looked at his tape and said, well, maybe he's not as accurate as he needs to be. I think maybe they're looking at some old tape. I think in this past season he really improved that part of his game, and I think he's NFL ready right now. I really do.
Sean Salisbury brought up his footwork. Obviously, he's got the frame. He's a winner, certainly after you watch Cincinnati's season last year. What else? What are some other traits? And obviously every team's got to figure out. You talked about accuracy, Dan,
yep.
Because you see the NFL as well. You understand what it takes at the next level. Does he have the ability to make, as they say, all the throws?
Well, I see, at least the last couple of years, I get to watch Desmond Ridder on Saturday and Joe Burrow on Sunday. He's not Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is one of the most accurate quarterbacks that's ever come into the league, so I'm not trying to indicate that he's anything like that, but he's certainly good enough. I don't think that you would consider him to be one of the best throwers in the league, but when you combine his mobility with very good throwing ability, I think he's going to be an excellent NFL player. And then let's get to the leadership qualities. Off the charts where that is concerned, team captain, tremendous person, father of a young daughter, great family type guy. And you know what? Also one of these quarterbacks that it wasn't a silver spoon type of situation. He was under-recruited. It came down to either Cincinnati or Eastern Kentucky. Cincinnati football was not at a peak at that point, so they were kind of able to sneak in there when a lot of big-time schools weren't interested. Saw him develop, saw him become a great college player, and like I said, I am bullish on Desmond Ridder. As I told him yesterday, my fondest wish is that he does not wind up with the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I do not want my hatred for the Steelers as a Bengals broadcaster to be diluted in any way by seeing Desmond Ridder on that roster.
We'll talk with Dan Horde, who's the play-by-play guy for Cincinnati Bengals as well as the Bearcats, talking NFL draft. Now, another guy that's going to be drafted high from the Bearcats is Ahmad Gardner. I watched him play a few times. Long guy, quick, fluid, with this movement at cornerback. What, other than that, what makes him the best cornerback in this year's draft?
Size. So take the things that you just mentioned and now talk about a guy that's 6'3", with great reach, and still has that ability to flip his hips and go. He is going to be a Pro Bowl-level cornerback in the NFL. I really believe that. I think that's why he's going to be the first cornerback selected, become just the second top 10 pick. in University of Cincinnati school history. He's good to go. Never gave up a touchdown pass in his college career. He's been playing for the last 3 years. He's special. And it's interesting because he's got the nickname Sauce. He wears the flashy chain that says Sauce. And you might think that, you know, he's kind of a cocky guy, but that is just his, it's almost like a split personality. Mm-hmm. When he's on the field, that's the persona that he takes on. When he's off the field, he's like the most polite, soft-spoken, quiet kid you've ever met in your life. So he's a really interesting guy, and I'm excited to see just how high he goes.
Do you think he's one of those plug-and-play guys that from day one, he's a guy you can either put on the left side or the right side, and he's going to play it immediately?
100%. Whatever team takes him in the top 10 is going to expect him to be a day one starter, and I think they're going to be happy with what they get. Seems like Darryl Stingley and Sauce Gardner are the top two corners in this draft. Sauce has the advantage between the two of those guys, and that he stayed healthy. Stingley obviously wasn't able to do that at LSU. When he played great. But Sauce never misses a snap, has played incredibly well in his college career, and I expect him to be a star in the NFL.
We're talking to Dan Hoard. He is the radio voice of the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cincinnati Bearcats. A great mix of insight today that we're getting. So, Dan, I'm just curious what your world is like. It's been like since the run to the Super Bowl for the Bengals. Such a special thing for anybody, but particularly in that market where they've had, you know, great tradition going back, but they've had some lean times, and, you know, they had that meteoric rise. So what do you think this does? Number one, you got to be basking in it right now to a degree, and then what does it do to the expectations going forward?
Well, I've referred to myself as Lou Gehrig this past year because I've been the luckiest man on the face of the earth. I did a college football team. They went 13-0 in the regular season and qualified for the 14 playoff before losing to Alabama. And then I had the chance to call the games for an NFL team that made it to the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, neither team ultimately won the title, but those seasons were incredible. I'm convinced my luck has been so good that I'll have my first hole-in-one this summer. And not only that, but it'll be a shank that hits the hood of a car, bounces off two trees, and then goes into the hole.
That counts.
It's been awesome. And the great thing from the Bengals' perspective now is they had this great season, but as any Titans fan knows, they struggled on the offensive line. They probably should have lost that playoff game with all the sacks that the Titans had, but they've addressed it in the offseason. They had one big weakness. They signed three offensive linemen in free agency. That has not always been the way the Bengals have performed. But they've kind of changed their approach to free agency over the last 3 years. And if they did fix the offensive line, and I think they have, they've got a legitimate chance to run it back if they can stay healthy.
What do you think their biggest needs are in the draft? Having addressed the offensive line, how do you think that affects their draft?
Yeah, well, they don't have to draft an offensive lineman in the first round. They still could because they have one spot that's still a little bit up in the air. That would be left guard. They signed Ted Karras as one of the three offensive linemen that they signed, and he can play center or guard. So if Tyler Linderbaum, the center from Iowa, is still there at number 31, he would be in play. There are a couple of guards that could be available at 31, Zion Johnson from Boston College, Kenyon Green from Texas A&M. If those guys were there, they could be in play. But I think the bigger need is cornerback. They don't have much depth at corner. They've got their main three guys back, but one of the three, Eli Apple, only came back on a one-year deal. The Bengals have historically liked to take cornerbacks in the first round. They did it five times in a 10-year stretch a few years ago. So if I had to make a guess, I think they'll go for the best corner on the board. But if Tyler Linderbaum is there, he might be too good to pass up as an offensive lineman.
Now, Cincinnati, the Bengals, not the Bearcats, the Bengals have two of the best combination of young wide receivers in the game, Chase and Higgins. And then you add Tyler Boyd in there. But what is the prognosis on T. Higgins? I know he had an injury that's going to put sideline him at least during this offseason. Will he be ready to go?
Yeah, he will be. It was nothing major. It was an injury that he played with. for the most part during the year. He missed two games early in the season and then played with it for the rest of the year. So minor shoulder surgery. His arm is in a sling right now, but he will definitely be good to go for the start of training camp.
Dan, were you surprised that well, not surprised. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know how this works. You have the success that you just laid out, especially if you're a program like Cincinnati that, you know, the when there's an opening, the bigger school, they tend to want to come pluck the hot name, the hot commodity that Luke Fickell stayed, and he's still the Bearcats coach?
Yes and no to that. Luke Fickell could have had any of the jobs that were out there. All of those schools contacted his agent, so we're talking Notre Dame, USC, LSU. I mean, it is a who's who of college football programs. But he did not interview for any of those jobs, and the reason was his integrity. Cincinnati was still playing. Obviously, they played on New Year's in the Cotton Bowl as one of the final four teams playing for a national championship, and he flat-out refused to talk to any of those schools while his team was still playing. What coach does that in this day and age? Any of them? I mean, his integrity prevented him from interviewing for any of those positions. So that tells you who Luke Fickell is. Now, he has been rewarded for that. They just upped his contract to more than $5 million a year at Cincinnati, which, you know, makes him the highest paid coach outside of the Power Five. But, you know, he's the real deal in every possible way. It's no mystery that he and Mike Vrabel are best friends and that Coach Fickell was best man at Mike Vrabel's wedding. They are two of the very best, and we're lucky to have them.
Yep. Good stuff as always, Dan. Really appreciate the visit. I'll be curious in a couple weeks if the Titans, have a former Bearcat on their roster. We will wait and see. But thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Dan Hoard, he is the play-by-play voice for the Bearcats and the Bengals. We'll come back and discuss some of that on the other side at the bottom of the hour. We talked about the rendering that came out and more info on the Titan Stadium. We'll do that at the bottom of the hour. Roman Josi at 12:15. Just got word that the captain will join us at 12:15 as well. So a loaded show here on this Friday. Willie, you're going to tell everybody about Lee Company.
I will indeed. Let's talk about Lee Company, speaking of the Predators. Yes, listen for the captain at 12:15 today. We'll talk some hockey with him as the Predators prepare for a huge weekend. A couple of division rivals coming to town, Chicago and then St. Louis. Lee Company has got your sponsorship of our radio coverage. It was going to be very special with Pete and Terry on the call on 102.5 The Game. Reunited on Saturday. So make sure you catch that one. Lee Company's got great sponsorship of our radio coverage, plus all around Smashville, you'll see their display. Now remember, the days are numbered where you will not be running that air conditioning. It's coming, those hot months. If you haven't had the air conditioner checked in a while, it's a good idea to do it, and that's a great time to get involved with Lee Company and their home maintenance plan. If you just need a one-time fix-up, they can do that for you, but the best plan is the home maintenance plan. Long-term, year-round coverage of not only the air conditioning unit, but your heating, your plumbing, and electric systems. You get the checkups each year on all four of those, and when you get repairs, you get discounts. So that's the way to go. It's going to save you money. That's what we do in our house, and it works for us. Lee Company, 615-567-1000. That's 615-567-1000, or go to leecompany.com.
Vanderbilt spring game will air tomorrow at 1 p.m. on ESPN 94.9. So keep that in mind tomorrow. Back here on the DDC. Got news that a certain dome is not going to be referenced a certain way anymore. That's going to take some getting used to. Syracuse, the Carrier Dome, is no more.
Wow.
JMA Wireless. Boy, that really rolls right off the tongue.
Nah.
Oh,
JMA Wireless Dome.
Can we have an early entry in the list? I mean, let's
JMA Wireless Dome.
That's an early entry to the list. If you're going to put your name on an arena, it's got to sound cool, man. There's too many words and letters. That doesn't work.
We need a syllable limit. Like, what's the syllable limit for naming rights to, like, a stadium?
That is just that's awful. I'm just going to call it the carrier dome.
Well, nobody's going to call it that anymore.
I am.
At least not their announcer, sure.
I know they're not. They can't. No.
But that's going to take some getting used to. Like, it's been the carrier dome for how long?
Since I've been in high – when I was in high school.
I was going
to say. Yeah, that goes way back.
Yeah.
I'm talking early Big East, you know, early ESPN, early 80s carrier dome. That was the big thing, right? Ronnie Cicely, Earl Washington.
Sherman Douglas.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on, Willie.
That was it.
You could throw Carmelo in there, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, that
but
was.
But Carmelo wasn't later. 30 years ago.
No, Carmelo wasn't 30
but I'm
years
trying,
ago.
I'm, so does it say on the release there what year the Carrier Dome opened?
No. Mm-mm. It does not.
Mm. I mean, it had to be early 80s.
I would. My guess
like,
would have been
Washington
80s.
And those guys, that was early 80s. Those early Big East matchups with Patrick Ewing and, you know, Chris Mullin and. All those great matchups.
Was it called the Carrier Dome out of the gates?
I'm pretty sure it was.
Then it was 1980.
That's what 1980. That makes sense. Yeah.
Wow. That's
and I believe that's right.
Derek Coleman. There's another one for you, Mace.
Yes.
Derek Coleman.
A Detroit native. You didn't know that, huh, Willie?
No, I didn't know that. That's a good one.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like the one that what is it the sun down in Sunrise, Florida, where the Panthers isn't it now like FLA Live Arena? It's like what is that? Like that doesn't roll.
Yeah,
Fly Live Arena.
Fly
Live Arena. Like what?
Fly Live.
We're talking about the Denver one now. It's not the Pepsi Center. It's Ball Arena.
Yeah. Well, at least that's like
yeah, that's
know,
better.
That's better.
I like
it's
that.
Better. It's better. Ball Arena.
I like that better than FLA.
I guess when the Nuggets are playing, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
Ball
yeah,
arena
there is,
than
they
hockey.
Do share.
Puck arena.
They do
four
share.
Syllables, it fits. Under the limit.
Roman Yossi is going to join us at 12:15, so we are going to move the list to after him. So we'll do you just made the list starting at 12:30 because a little late entry to the show. Roman Yossi at 12:15. So – kind of got a mixed bag on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kind of going back to our previous conversation, Dustin in Hopkinsville, Kentucky says, actually, I'm a blue-collar worker. I'm an electrician, and I'm 33, about to be 34. I feel like Ryan Tannehill is closer to me in my beliefs than any other. He's not like Aaron Rodgers where he's bitching every season. That's Dustin in Hopkinsville.
I do think there is probably a silent admiration by a lot of people, or at least a backing. I don't know about admiration, but you know, it's the vocal. There's a vocal minority that makes their doubts known. I mean, that's always part of the gig when you're an NFL quarterback. But I think there's probably some of that, a respect, a belief among those that don't get on social media. They watch the games, but they're not going to call a show like ours or that sort of thing. Agree?
Yeah,
there's always that group out there.
Sure. Well, it's not like he doesn't have any supporters. He, of course, has supporters and people that can relate to him. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Christy on Twitter tweets at us and says that you're spot on, D-Mace, that's how she views him, Ryan Tannehill. He'll leave once he's done here. And I do think there is that factor. It doesn't feel like he is a guy. I don't know how much that, you know, factors in or not, because sometimes we don't know until – it happens, right? Like, we don't – I mean, there's some guys you look at and you're like, it just kind of feels like they'll stick around when they're done. But there's other guys, like, you have no idea until you realize, oh, they decided to stay here when their playing days were done. He doesn't feel like a guy that'll be here. But to me, it's just I don't know how you really relate to somebody who is not putting themselves out there to really relate to. I understand the Titans may love that. He's very buttoned up. He's very professional. He's not going to say anything that's going to be bulletin board material or get anybody in trouble. None of that stuff, and that's all fantastic. But I don't know how you really – we're talking about fans relating to you. Now, you don't have to go the extreme of Taylor Lewan. I remember when Marcus Mariota was – at least he made the attempt to be on the band stage. It was uncomfortable to watch him on the band stage with the offensive lineman because he's like barely waving the flag going, hi, you know, and these guys are like pulling their shirts off and they got these big beer bellies and they're chugging beers and they've got catfish in their hands and Marcus Mariota's over there just kind of like waving a little gold towel off to the side. It was uncomfortable to watch,
but
at least he did it.
He showed up.
He was there. Like Ryan Tannehill, just tell me the event. Tell me the function. You've seen
well, remember, that. Remember though, that there's been 2 years where there hadn't been as many functions, right? Fans haven't been at the game. So that I don't know that he wouldn't have done it if, for example, he was invited to do a towel waving during that time. I don't know.
That's fair, but it does. I mean,
so he has not done one?
I don't remember him doing a towel wave at a Predators game.
Oh,
I mean, maybe if they are fortunate enough to make it to the playoffs, maybe we can pencil him in for game 3 if he'd like to do it.
And I know there are a lot of people.
If he'd like to.
There are a lot of people
out there. Got to make it first.
They're saying, well, there's a lot of players on the Titans teams that don't do towel waving. And you're absolutely right. But.
And they're not the quarterback.
Exactly.
Making $38 million a year.
Not the quarterback. And
highest paid player on the team.
You know, you see your left tackle. He's doing, him and his buds are doing it. The offensive lineman. It's just something. And again, maybe it's not Ryan's personality. Maybe he's doing a lot of other things behind the scene, which I would, if I had to bet money, I'm sure he is doing things behind the scene.
Clearly he does something because they love him over there. They have the endless support for him.
But again, it's just like one of the callers said, he wasn't a draft pick. So it's a little bit different. He's coming in to a situation. You know?
Yeah.
It's not like he's staying here. And he hasn't made himself. It's almost like I equate it to this. Me going from here to Nashville to Baltimore. And I think they fell in, you know, they fell in love with me and endured and wrapped their arms around me because I went in there as one of them, not the football players. I went in there as one of the Baltimore residents, and I was doing things and making myself visible and answering questions, whatever I needed to do to make that transition easy.
So that's something you thought about. Is
exactly.
That something you thought about when you went there? You said, I want to become. I want to jump in there.
Yeah, because my thing was. To any NFL player, and this is why I believe Ryan is doing things behind the scene. Any NFL player that is in a city more than 2 years, you're doing yourself an injustice and you're doing the community an injustice if you're not immersing yourself in the community, not doing things in the community, not doing functions or whatever else there may be in trying to help the community. Because now you're a part of the community. I was there for 6 years. I became a part of the community, and I wanted to, you know, because I knew that if I didn't, you know, my transition there would be a lot harder if I was sort of standoffish, you know, because I can't play a perfect game every week.
Right.
You know,
I'm not surprised to hear you say that, though. That doesn't surprise me one bit. Because the two of us know how you're made up, so I'm not surprised to hear that. I'm not sure everybody thinks like that. I'm sure, you know, I know a lot of players do, but I don't think they all do. I think some, like, I don't care, and they don't care until they care, if you know what I mean, right? You don't realize how much you care until you're in that spot, and you're like, boy, I sure would like for them to give me a break. I sure would like for the narrative to be a little bit different. All right, Adam Friedman from the Tennessean. There's more details on the new Titans Stadium. We'll discuss that on the other side. DDC, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Back here on the DDC on this Friday, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Derek Mason with you. Adam Friedman from the Tennessean, state government and politics reporter. More news on the front of the Titans' new stadium. And Adam has been kind enough to join us on short notice. He's a part of the article that's come out in the Tennessean all over this. Adam, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing fantastic. So what jumped out at you with been kind of waiting and things have been kind of coming out in layers and still a lot of questions of how can all this come together? Is it going to be a retractable roof? We know it could be enclosed. Is it just a dome? How much is it truly going to cost? Where's it going to be? What's going to be around it? It looks like more and more details, according to this article that you guys put out there, are starting to come out there. What jumped out at you?
Well, I think, first of all, the price has been speculated, right? Everybody's kind of estimated $2 billion, but this is feels like a more definitive. I mean, it's, I think the range they gave is like 1.9 to 2.2, which seems about in line with, what do you call it, Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. Any of the recent stadiums basically built outside of Los Angeles, which was a just different ballgame of price range. But the other big thing was they would build this in 31 months, and the goal is to have it ready by the 2026 NFL season, which I think hints at the fact that they still want to have this ready maybe for the 2021 World Cup if they can get it figured out fast enough.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and I don't think there's any doubt they want that. The idea of building it on-site behind the current Nissan Stadium and then really closer to the water, which is going away from where the new building would stand, it looks like they want to develop that whole area and build around it.
Yeah, I think the way they see this as I don't know if you've been to Chicago where they've got kind of this whole waterfront thing. They sort of see like they can build a neighborhood off the water, right, and sort of, you know, mixed use, you know, restaurants, apartments, whatever else kind of goes into that, and then put the stadium behind it and sort of it becomes sort of part of this kind of giant neighborhood, probably kind of locking in kind of where between the highway and the river, and they might do something else depending on kind of how it expands. That seems to be the view right now, is sort of just to build this whole thing where there's like mixed use in front and the stadium behind, and it creates a big neighborhood, I guess.
I still haven't seen any projected attendance, like what they envision of this holding, unless I've missed something. The current one is 69, whatever they've used over the years, 69,117 or whatever the magic number is they used for years. Do you know, Adam, what they're kind of envisioning this holding at full capacity?
I don't think they have a number yet. I think there has been some discussion, especially in like when they discuss in front of kind of state lawmakers about making sure there's like a at least 60 to 65,000 seats. You know, if you look at other stadiums, right, you know, a big one that hosts a ton of Final Fours and all other events like Indianapolis, I think they're close to 70,000, and then like a basketball game can expand to 100 because they can put seats on the field. So I would probably expect it to be in that range. You know, I don't think this is going to be like the Jerry World out in Texas size, right, where I think they can fit like close to 100,000 people for a football game or something insane.
We're talking with Adam Friedman out of Tennessean, talking new renderings that have just came out. Now, Adam, is that a – I'm looking at it, but is it a retractable or is it just going to be a dome?
You know, that's the – seems to be the most interesting question right now, and I don't actually know. I know the language is enclosed stadium. I think the retractable thing will come down to, like, what is probably the cost and, you know, how hard it is to get – build in their certain in their kind of time frame. So I don't think there's been a decision yet, at least it seemed like to me.
Now, obviously, the big question here amongst Nashvillians is, okay, how is the payment going to be divvied up? Obviously, the Titans are going to put in their money, the NFL put in their money, investors, but how much of it comes from the city and the taxpayers?
Yeah, so the numbers that have been sort of talked about by like the Speaker of the House were basically $500 million from the state, $700 million from the team, $700 million from the city. You know, that seems to be sort of the going number. You look at like Buffalo Stadium, I think the NFL contributed like itself somewhere between $100 and $150 million, so you could add that onto it. And that could be around the $2 billion range. But I don't think we really know like what the final price tag could be with construction costs, right? I mean, the cost today could be $2 billion, but if it takes another year, everything else, it could be $2.5 by then. You know, you don't really know, and so that's where the sort of the question remains. It does seem like, though, that the city or the state, I'm sorry, is locked into this $500 million number, and then the rest will become from the team and city in some format. We just don't know what how.
Adam Friedman is with us. He is with the Tennessean. Big article. New Nashville NFL stadium could exceed $2 billion and be ready by 2026, which would be the World Cup year. In theory, that would be what Nashville would love to hit out of the ballpark is to host – a couple of World Cup games. So, Adam, do you think there's another private investor that would be interested in getting into the game? Has that been talked about a lot? Is there any speculation there?
So there has been none of that. I have not heard anything about anybody else trying to kind of help build this stadium. It seems to really just be the Adams Strunk family and then the state and city. For the IndyCar race last year, right, it was completely privately funded, but I haven't heard any inkling of anybody else wanting to get a piece of the stadium.
Interesting. I'm curious what some of our city leaders, maybe some of the state leaders, what do they think about in terms of this campus that they call? You know, in theory, you're going to back up where the stadium is now, take that space and build, you know, some places to hang out, eat, do the thing. Does that just displace what's already going on downtown, or do you think that just brings more people? And if so, can we handle that traffic-wise and everything? Like, what would be the effect of having a brand-new, quote-unquote, campus around a new stadium?
Yeah, I mean, if I could predict how that would affect traffic and whatnot and the tourism numbers, I'd probably be the smartest person in the state, frankly.
Well, that's why we have shows like this, for people that are, you know, less than that. We just like to make stuff up.
Yeah, I mean,
and wonder.
I think what they're kind of planning for is the city just keeps growing. It seems like almost feels like an unimaginable number, right? Every year, outside of maybe the pandemic year, is just like tourism just goes up and up and up, and more people move here, right? So theoretically, if those numbers continue to kind of go in that pace, this kind of East Bank development, or I call it a campus neighborhood, could, you know, be a place for what basically the new population comes, right, when Oracle comes and all these other businesses that are sort of starting to move here. It will certainly change the landscape of the city. I mean, I don't know if there's a limit on how much tourism the city can hold. It feels like we're at a capacity now, so we could expand to fit more people. So maybe this does that, but I don't think I can, like, say that like how it could affect traffic or whatnot right now, because if I knew that, I would be reporting it, I guess.
Now, Adam.
Yeah, Go ahead, Derek.
Okay. Now, Adam, quickly, have they mentioned potential revenue, not just from the stadium, but from potentially the campus-like environment that will be around the stadium?
Yeah, so the two numbers there are they expect about a $4 billion investment around the stadium, whether that's, you know, that will probably come from a combination of public and private. That is sort of a projection, right? So nobody actually knows. It's just sort of what the team and the state sort of feel. And then from that, they think it can generate like $30 billion in economic impact over the next 30 years. Obviously, that won't happen right away, right? You got to actually, there's nothing there currently, or not a lot there. You got to build. That'll take some time. You know, it'll come in phases. So, but that's sort of what they're selling it as. I would say those are projections, not necessarily like set in stone, but that's what at least people kind of trying to sell this project, though.
Have you heard anything? Do you think the Titans know, Adam? Because the NFL is going to pitch in money. They've done it for everybody else. This is the new phase in NFL markets, is building these new state-of-the-art facilities. The NFL has been pitching in. They're pitching in Buffalo. They've pitched in elsewhere. Do you think the Titans know or have an idea of what the NFL is willing to pitch in for this new stadium?
You know, I think the number, I think I said it before, is they gave $150 million to Buffalo, so I don't know why Tennessee couldn't get that, right? I mean, it seems like that would be at least the minimum they would get. Buffalo is building a smaller stadium, so maybe there's a case you could make that, well, we're putting a little more money in, so you should get a little more for our kind of investment. But I feel like that is probably like the floor of what the team could get from that side. But that could be just to cover some other stuff, right? If we're talking a $2.2 billion stadium, and before it was $700 million from the city and team and $500 from the state, you're $300 million short of what you need to spend. So they might be covering that kind of extra little bit that they have to kind of get this project, you know, over the top. If it's, you know, it's initially 1.9, but to get to the finish line, it needs 2.1 billion, for example.
Adam, maybe you could help educate us on this. The $500 million investment by the state, and I know you've listed sort of a point-by-point speculation here, but I'm just curious, for somebody that's living in East Tennessee or, you know, over in Memphis, they see this, you know, maybe a question is, where do they get the return on the investment? Where does the state get this money back? If you're investing $5 million, you hope over the long term there's a benefit to the entire state, I would assume.
Yeah, so the way they're going to do it is they're going to borrow the money or issue bonds. That's kind of a similar process. And they're kind of hoping that from sales tax revenue, so like when you buy something, right, you pay like a 10% sales tax and like 5% of it goes to the state and two more goes to somewhere else and 2.7 goes to the cities, right? So that's how they're hoping to pay for it from the sales tax around the stadium, right? So if you're in East Tennessee, none of your sales tax they're hoping will go to this. Instead, it was going to come from if you go to a Titans game, you know, that's how you'll pay, right? When you go buy a beer there, a portion of the sales tax will go to them. Or if they build this entire campus development, the sales tax from that will help pay for this. There seems to be a high expectation in the surrounding development to pay for a lot of this, right? About half of what the state could get for this, you know, $500 million bond roughly could come from just the team hosting events like it currently does. But the other half would have to be paid for by this growth of mixed-use development around the stadium.
I'm just wondering if I can still get from my house in East Nashville to the highway in the same amount of time with this new campus up here in about 4 years. I might have to think about that. It's going to be a lot. You got any new roads?
About a bike?
Yeah.
Or a
bike.
Moped.
We might have to dust off the old bike. Yeah, no question.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's not even an easy drive to get there, frankly.
No question.
Yeah, I don't think – when I think of driving around this town, easy, never, that's the word that never comes to mind. So I don't think there's going to be any way around. It's just going to be harder and harder. Adam, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this, and maybe we'll talk to you down the road. I'm curious if there's more info that will be coming out here soon.
Yeah, I mean, I would expect the next 2 or 3 weeks we'll know whether the state's going to chip in their money in. So that should be coming shortly at least.
Well, maybe we'll do it then.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Adam Friedman. For the Tennessean, he is the state government and politics reporter for them, and he is part of this big story that came out this morning, right before our show. New Nashville NFL Stadium could exceed $2 billion and be ready by 2026. We'll come back, close out hour number two next. Cool event on May 16th. We are partnering up with Folds of Honor. It's going to be a celebrity golf tournament. Hermitage Golf Course. Put your team together. Come play with athletes, musician.
Who?
Why can't I
who?
Say it?
Justin.
Musician. Why? What's Justin? What's happened?
Justin Bieber. That's what you're trying to say.
Athletes, musicians. What happened? I was like, brr, did I just have a mini stroke? What just happened?
Nah. I thought you were about to say magicians, and now I've been really intrigued.
Maybe yesterday I did do a lot of magicians and musicians. What happened?
I was gonna say, I'm there. If it was magicians, oh, I'm there.
See, the magician is just me hitting the ball into the water and making it disappear.
There we go. Voila.
What is the restaurant here in town that has the magic acts and the tricks? And every time we've ever tried to go there, it's always
it's
like
off
a
second.
What is
downtown.
It called again?
I forgot what it's called. Yes. I've been there once.
You have been there?
Yes, I have been there.
And? What did you think?
I mean, it was okay.
Okay.
The food was okay. The entertainment was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all in all, it's okay experience. That's just for me. Now, somebody else might have went there and thought it was like, wow, you know, best thing since toilet paper. I don't know.
Well, I don't believe any magicians are going to be at our celebrity golf event, but I don't know why I couldn't say that, but. That was really weird. We'll also have other local celebrities. Sign up at thegamenashville.com/golf. So good stuff from Adam Friedman. And, boy, just a little bit more detail. The good news is the more we talk about this, it seems like they are quickly moving in the direction they need to go, because the longer you wait, it's not helping anything, right? It's just like everything else really in this country, but everything else in this market, everything just keeps going up, up, and up. And so – if you're going to do this, as they say, blank or get off the pot, right? So get off the pot and let's do it.
But what do you got? The question is the city, though. Uh-huh. Where is the city going to be when the ball's in their court? Like if the state, you know, gets this done and said, okay, we got our $500 million on the table, mm-hmm. we're in. Mm-hmm. Then the ball's in the court for it's the, you know, the Titans and it's Metro.
Yep.
So. And that's still a very, very high bill that they got to come up with. And that's, you know, nothing to sneeze at. You saw how complicated it was to get the fairgrounds thing done with the soccer stadium and rebuilding the mm-hmm. racetrack. I mean, that was very complicated.
And, right? And that's Ingram was nearly, he was buying that all himself, wasn't he?
A lot of it was, yes. Yeah. So that, and that's not even close to the amount of dollars we're talking about for this. So I wouldn't say we're still in the first or second inning here.
I want to ask you guys a question. Looking at the renderings, how do you feel about the stadium moving away from the Cumberland? I personally don't like it. I like that the stadium set right off of the banks, where you look across the bridge and you know from Broadway and you can see the stadium right there. I know you still will be able to see it because it will be much taller, probably, than the smaller little buildings there. But I just like the stadium sitting off the Cumberland like that, as opposed to pushing back and then all of the, you know, retail.
Closer to the highway.
Exactly. I'm not too keen on it. I'm not too big on
that. Yeah, it's not perfect, but I don't know that they really have a choice in that. I've got mixed feelings on the quote-unquote campus there. We've talked about this before. Like, we've got a pretty good campus right across the river, right? That's critical real estate there. You don't want to jeopardize anything that's going on. Yeah, so that was my question that you heard me ask. What do you guys think of that? Like, are we worried that it's just going to dilute what's already happening down there? And is that a good thing? And then there's the whole question of what does it do to traffic, which is already getting out of control, as we know. And that's going to just bring more people into the area. I don't think there's a plan to put new roads in or anything like that. So there's a lot to think about here.
I think the traffic is the most pressing one. I don't think the taking away from Broadway. I think there are people that are going to still, Broadway is Broadway, and people are still going to go on Broadway no matter what. This gives them another place to, you know, be a little closer to the stadium and walk, you know, not over the bridge, but directly to the stadium. That's going to be packed, and Broadway is going to be packed. So I don't think anyone's going to be, you know, suffer from, you know, them building the campus on the other side of the Cumberland. I think it's still, people still pack Broadway because they're building bars just about everywhere. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it is, people are still going Broadway.
I just think it's, sometimes it's better just to keep spreading things out. Mm-hmm. I mean, right? I mean, you don't want just literally one centralized location where everybody comes to, right? I mean, as you see our city, you've got hotels going up everywhere. Derek, as you just said, bars are now everywhere. There's new districts popping up. I remember when the SEC first announced when the media days was coming here, they're like, it was going to the, you know, the yards or whatever. I was like, what do you, that was the first time we'd heard. They were like, what, we live here. Where
is the yard?
What? I mean, the Gulch now. I mean, Willie, you know this. I mean, Derek, what, when you played, what was there? Hardly anything, right?
Not that I remember.
So, I mean, just more areas of just keep growing up and up. So, I don't think spreading everything out is a bad thing. Because, look, when you say traffic is getting bad, like, no, it's not getting bad. It's been horrible for a good while. And you know, that's not going to change. So, maybe the more we spread it out, maybe that could only help things. I think what I'm a little bit confused on is, what are the concrete plans? Like, what is it? What's going to be around it? Like, we've got all
bars and restaurants. I wonder about residency, too. It's like, is there some residency stuff, too?
Office buildings.
Office, residency. Is it just bars and restaurants? Like, I haven't seen, you know, the Battery is just bars and restaurants. Well, I guess that's not true.
There's some office buildings.
There's office buildings because there's hotels. A radio station across the street. So, you know, what is
there's an Omni hotel right there.
There is an Omni hotel.
Well, if you go, if you say, for instance, if you go, whether it's in New England, I don't know what their stadium is. It's not called, what is it called now? I forget what it's called now. Or you go to Dallas. Dallas is, they have their practice facility. They have, you know, it's just it's almost like this little small city where they have hotels, they have workout places, they have office space. A little bit down the way, they have, you know, places to live, like high rises or whatever you want to call them. So I'm pretty sure that's how it will be once the official, you know, once everything is kind of set in stone, because you want that sort of mixed use environment where people are living there, but there are people working there as well, and there are people eating and shopping there.
But of course, in Foxborough and at Jerry's World,
yes,
that's out away from the main city.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's sort of the I think that was maybe a little more sensible to put stuff around a stadium that's not right already in a downtown. But I'm not saying it wouldn't work. I just think I'm curious to see what effect that has on everything if that's how it goes down.
Well,
I think it's
gonna be
pretty
hard
clear
to get around.
With
harder.
We might need another pedestrian bridge.
It's gonna be harder to get around.
Willie, I don't. I mean,
you're right. You're probably right.
But why would you need another pedestrian bridge? Like, that one is not big enough. Like, how many people? I mean, it already holds people coming over to come to the game. So, what? Why would you need another one?
I'm sure.
I'm joking, half joking, but I'm just thinking you'd like to be able to, I guess, shuffle people back and forth across the river.
Well, that's a different thing. No, that I believe will happen. I've brought this up before. Like, that happens in a lot of other cities. You know, it was brought up even in the interview with Adam about Chicago. Like, people do utilize the waterfront with water taxis. Willie, you've been to Vancouver. I've ridden the water taxi there. New York, Chicago, they have water taxis going back and forth. Like, that could be a real thing.
Well, James Robertson Parkway, or, you know, no, I'm trying to think of which street it is, but, you know, the one on the other side of the stadium from the pedestrian bridge, a lot of people walk across that bridge. It's not really designed for pedestrians, but, you know what I'm saying? Like, depending on where you're coming from,
I don't think you want
to. Sometimes it's easier
to
walk across that.
Yeah.
No, but that's what I'm saying. There would be another accommodation.
Exactly. There would be. I mean, it wouldn't be bad to add another bridge.
I think you could probably.
And that doesn't even address the roads.
Mm-mm.
The water taxi is the route. That's the water route.
It's going to be a lot of water taxis.
So, I mean, it goes on
a whole bunch
cities.
Of them.
that's a quick fix, man. You just have water taxis going back and forth, the people going back and forth. You know, that's the quickest way, get it back and forth rather than building another bridge. I mean, you really want to do that?
Hey, they're building a stadium. Might as well build a bridge, too. Another
one. Roman Yossi coming up at 12:15. Remember, you just made the list to 12:30 after the captain. Hour number three next.